morning. This is First Things, brought to you by Jackson's First Presbyterian Church. The minister of the First Presbyterian Church is Dr. Ligon Duncan. Stay tuned for First Things. And now here with First Things is Dr. Ligon Duncan.
Thank you, Bill Wyman. This is Ligon Duncan, your host for First Things, and I am co-hostless today. Derek Thomas is on his way to Springfield, Connecticut, I think is the place where Derek is going. He is gallivanting all over the universe during this autumn season, and we'll see him regularly at First Pres on Wednesday nights, where he is preaching, continuing his series on the Gospel of Mark. We actually took a break from that over the summer, and he did a series on Pilgrim's Progress, but we're back to the Gospel of Mark. But on the weekends, very often, Derek this autumn just has a very heavy slate of preaching, and we're thankful for those opportunities. He's got a couple of opportunities to speak for R.C. Sproul this fall. He's already spoken to a couple of regional conferences and is now going to speak to their pastor's conference later this month. But with the seminary fall break coming up, he's got a pretty heavy speaking load over the next 8 or 9 days. So I am without him, but I am with another dear friend, Mike Ross, the senior minister of the Trinity Presbyterian Church here in Jackson, Mississippi. Good morning, Mike.
Hello, Ling.
We're delighted to have you here
today.
Good
to be here again.
Mike, first of all, there are a lot of folks in our listening audience that know this, but there are a lot that don't. Trinity Church is no longer gathering to meet for worship and ministry and fellowship and discipleship on Northside Drive. You're on Old Canton Road now.
That's right.
We're in
the old Christ United Methodist Church.
I think all of us still think of Christ United Methodist Church in that location because so many, so many civic activities have happened there. You know, from basketball games to brownie meetings to Boy Scout meetings to things like that. So people really know that facility. Well, have you had people drop in thinking they're coming to Christ United?
Yes. We've had a few Methodists get halfway through the service and say, "This doesn't look Methodist to me."
That's great.
So we are.
But your congregation's encouraged.
I think they are, and I mean, people are coming, and it's growing, and I think, honestly, Lig, when we stepped over there, people just expected there would be thousands of people coming.
Hmm.
But, you know, we're in a pretty highly churched area,
and
people were disoriented for a while. I mean, there would be people who would show up at the old location looking for Trinity and find Redeemer, which is a great little church. But it's taken a while. But we have accomplished a lot. And
now you've got a preschool.
We do.
Now.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Sue Neville has been in the preschool business for years.
She's a legend in the Jackson area.
She's actually beginning her fourth decade. She's educating now the children of her first children that she handled. And she moved, I think, 3 or 4 different times in the past, like 6 or 7 years. She would always outgrow the little church she was in. It would become more of the tail would be wagging the dog. They'd get inconvenience. And so when we moved over there, she had come to us 2 years before when we were in the smaller location.
Right.
And we couldn't accommodate her. So as soon as we moved over there, we said this would be perfect. She has room to grow, and she has. Mm. I mean, I think she's adding, she's added another classroom this year. And I think she told me probably between now and the start of next year, or when start up next fall, they'll add 2 more classrooms.
And roughly how many students does she have?
She's got, I think, over 130.
And it's called the Trinity Preschool.
It is. Mm-hmm. It goes from nursery to 5 years old.
If somebody goes to the Trinity Presbyterian Church website, can they find information out about
the preschool there?
Now, what is the Trinity Presbyterian Church website?
It's www.trinitychurchpca.com.
Okay, really trinitychurchpca.com. Mm-hmm. And then go there, and you can get the phone numbers for contacting Sue and the preschool. Mm-hmm. And what ages does she have in her?
I say they go from the nursery. There's even a mother's morning day out for a couple of days a week, all the way up to 5 years old.
Okay.
They end there, and they start kindergarten the next year in the private or public schools.
Yeah. And in the congregation of Trinity Church enjoying the new facilities?
Oh, yeah. It is nice.
Yeah.
It's really nice. It's it's not that vacuous. I mean, we're filling it up in a lot of things. You know, the sanctuary is unique. It has a huge balcony.
Yes.
You think of 1,200 people and you're putting 354 in, and you figure, boy, you'll be rattling around. Well, not really, because of that 1,200 seats, about six of them or eight, seven of them are upstairs.
Wow.
And so there's, it's like us two tiers, and when they're on the ground floor, it's very comfortable.
And you've got new pulpit furniture. I know that when I went over and you kind of gave me a private tour, you have a man in the congregation
he's in one of our sister churches at Pear Orchard with Carl Kalberkamp.
Is an excellent craftsman and has built beautiful, beautiful pulpit furniture.
He's built the pulpit, the baptism font, the communion table, the chairs, everything. It's nice.
And the stained glass, I think, is in now. You were showing me some of the design work on that, and that's it.
In fact, we've got a write up on it in our inquirer's class. Mm. It's Pearl River Glass Company here in town did it, and it's pretty. It illustrates the Trinity Presbyterian Church. So if you look at the glass, it's got the Presbyterian, the Celtic cross, as we call it. But it has three circles for the different persons representing the persons of the Trinity. Mm. It's very attractive. Mm. Yeah.
Mike, tell us, how did you become a Christian?
I grew up in a Roman Catholic family in Columbus, Ohio, a very devout Catholic family. In fact, as you know, Ligon, because we've laughed about this and talked about it before, I actually studied to be a priest when I was in high school. Went away to a monastery for 4 years. And while I was there, I just came to the conclusion one day, reading in John chapter 10, that where Jesus said in fact, I was looking at this little New Testament. I still have that New Testament where I had that underlined from October 1966.
Wow.
I came that they might have life and have it abundantly. And I came to the conclusion then, at the age of 17, that I had religion, but I didn't really have a relationship with God.
Hmm.
I didn't know where to find that, and I went to a large secular university, which was very godless, and I wandered for 10 years until I moved to Memphis, Tennessee, began to work, take a job there with the old International Harvester Company. An evangelical man befriended me. We played basketball and handball together. I was a young bachelor, and he and his wife and little boy would feed me. And finally, he invited me to church, the Central Church in Memphis, Tennessee, which was an independent church, evangelical church. And it was a perfect combination of the means of grace. The preaching of Jim Latimer was very anointed, I think, and powerful in those days, and Wiley's Witness. And there were a group, I found out later, of about 25 people who put me on their daily prayer list, and they prayed for me. My dentist and an attorney I was using and all sorts of things. And through that span of 18 months, in August of 1976, I came to know the Lord.
And how long did it take you to go from becoming a new believer in Christ to deciding that you were headed into gospel ministry?
It took about 3 years.
Yeah.
I entered into a relationship with a man who was a navigator, and he discipled me one-on-one. He's since gone to be with the Lord. We had a real great young men's Bible study on Saturday morning, and probably the majority of the young men in that study end up either on the mission field or in the pastorate.
Hmm.
And about 2 years into being converted, I met my wife here from Jackson, who was a strong Christian, and we actually dated and got to know each other, being trained to be counselors at a Billy Graham Evangelistic Crusade that was coming to Memphis. And then we got engaged, and probably about 2 months after we were married, I said, Jane, I really feel called to the mission field, as she did at that time. Excuse me. So we went off to Columbia Biblical Seminary. Our session suggested that because they're so well known for missions. But while we were there, the faculty and I did an internship under Dr. Hugh McClure at the First Presbyterian Church there in Columbia. Most of my advisors said, you really need to be in the pulpit and need to be in a North American church. So we switched from a foreign missions track to a North American pastoral track, and then ended up in the PCA.
We're talking to Michael F. Ross, who is the senior minister of the Trinity Presbyterian Church here in Jackson on Old Canton Road. Many of you will remember Trinity at its old location on Northside, but they are now in what, to many people who've lived in Jackson for a long time, is the building that they associated with Christ United Methodist Church. Christ United Methodist Church has now moved further down or out on Old Canton Road, and Trinity is in that facility. Many of you pass by Trinity Presbyterian Church when you're taking your children to the soccer fields on Saturday morning to play. What's the phone number at Trinity Church?
977-0774.
So if someone wanted to contact Trinity Church to find out how to get there, to find out what the services are, they could call 601-977-0774. And we'll say that again before we're over with, but Mike has also indicated the website of Trinity Church is filled with information not only about the day school, but about the church, about the preschool, but about the church. And that website is trinitychurchpca.com. So if you go to www.trinitychurchpca.com, you'll get to the website. Mike, who are some of the people who've influenced you most as a Christian minister, or maybe just as a Christian?
Well, the man under whose preaching I was converted, I didn't know anything about. I had never been in a Protestant church till I set foot in that church in February of 1975. I was 26 years old.
Is that hard, Mike?
It was strange.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a comical story.
Yeah.
I wish we had time, but I've always looked at Christianity as being primarily driven by the preached word. And so he had a profound influence on me. The believers there that I fellowshiped with those first 2 years, they were very serious about the Bible, about evangelism and missions. So those are big emphases in my life. It was a very missions-minded church. Dr. William Larkin, who was the Greek and New Testament professor, he's
one of the
PCA
humblest
guy.
Men I think I've ever met.
He just impressed upon us the seriousness of the Word of God and doing your homework before you got up in the pulpit. And then Igu Hodges was my systematics professor, and he really, I entered there as a kind of a closet Calvinist. I didn't know I was one, but it was under his teaching and preaching, and he really would preach during theology classes, that I became Reformed, and so I chose to go into the PCA and study them. But I've been influenced by, I'm not just saying this because you're here, but I've been influenced by the men I've worked around, by you and Carl Kalberkamp and Randy Riddle and Art Scott over in the PCA. I've always had good relationships with men, Harry Reeder and people like that. And one of my special mentors is Archie Parrish. I call Archie Parrish and Gordon Reed your pastor.
Yeah.
In fact, I talked to him yesterday.
Oh.
When I need an older man's advice.
Right.
God's always providing me with good brothers and good people and good mentors everywhere I've gone.
Now you're a fan of Martin Luther as well.
I am. That's one of my heroes.
When did that love for Luther develop in you? Because you've got all of Luther's writings. You've read probably more of them than most PCA ministers, and maybe more than most Lutheran ministers have read of Luther.
Well, actually, when I was in the process of becoming a Christian, the pastor would quote Martin Luther a lot. And of course, in my thinking, then Martin Luther was the arch heretic.
Right.
But as the guys that the man who was leading me to the Lord, he would say, oh no, Martin Luther has a background like yours. So I actually began as a non-Christian to read about Luther's experience, his conversion experience.
Yeah.
And it so paralleled mine that there just was an affinity there, you know.
Mike, you just said that you believe that the preached word drives Christianity. How do you approach preaching? That's obviously something very important to you.
Well, it is important, and it is the most important thing I think a minister does. And I think if people were going to criticize me, they would find many things to criticize. And I think one of them would be, well, he spends so much time preparing his sermons that he's not out to run the people enough. That's probably true, because I'm not gifted to the point where I can, you know, some guys can look at a text for 2 hours and throw together a bang-up sermon. I can't. I have to really study it. But I go by the method, same one you do, Lig. We follow an expository method. That means I read the text, and I outline it from what it actually says. I let the text, whether it's a paragraph or a chapter or maybe sometimes a verse, just a sentence, I let it pick the topic and pick the subpoints. I preach in an outline format. And then I go and what we do exegesis, I look at the Greek, I look at the background and the history, I find out what the text was saying to the people then, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago, whatever it was. And then I fill it in with doctrine. I think, like Lloyd Jones, preaching is theology on fire. There are things we need to know about God and man and sin and salvation and the world and the kingdom. and then I make application. So basically, I make an outline, and I go over it four times. I make an outline, I go over it exegetically, I go over it theologically, I go over it in terms of applications, and then historically, and then in terms of applications. And I'm just trying to take bridge the then to the now and show people that God is the same, men are the same, our problems and solutions are the same.
About how long on average do you spend on preparing a sermon?
It takes me the bulk of a work day, and oftentimes, like this week, because of interruptions, I didn't finish my sermon still around midnight. I'll take them home and work
on
them.
So you may spend 8 hours or more preparing a message.
Yeah, sometimes I've spent as many as 14 hours, depending on how difficult the text is.
Let's say you're talking with a young minister who says, you know, Mike, I want to be faithful in preaching the word, mm-hmm. but I'm new at this. It takes me a long time to get something ready, mm-hmm. and I'm not in a church like you, Pastor Ross, where you've got some assistants to help. But I've still got to speak 3 times a week and visit my people. Mm-hmm. Any advice for me?
Yeah, I didn't start out in church like that. Yeah. I was a church planner, and I had to do everything.
Yeah.
And I did speak 3 times a week because then I had Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday. So I was preparing 3 messages a week. It didn't take me but a month to go to the elders. Actually, it was a steering committee. They hadn't been ordained yet. And I said, man, we got 2 choices. I can run around like a chicken with my head off and give you pablum. Or I can concentrate on stuff and give you meat, and you guys have to pick up the slack. And they said, we'll pick up the slack.
Wow.
And I've always found my elders willing to do that. I was at Surfside Beach for 10 years, never had an assistant, had one three-quarter time secretary, but it was amazing how many things the office, elders, deacons, and the people did. And they just said, you know, finally I would hear people say, well, Pastor Ross can't do that. He has to study.
Hmm.
And if you create that kind of expectation in the congregation, the people will usually get behind you. Sometimes you have to train them how to treat you.
Hmm.
You know?
How often are you preaching now, Mike? Are you preaching 2 or 3 times a week?
No, I only preach 2 times a week now, morning and evening. And I'm in the pulpit both times if I'm physically here, if I'm not like Derek traveling somewhere.
Is there a preaching service on Wednesday night at Trinity Church?
No, Wednesday night we have small groups. We have committee meetings, we got choir, we got youth. It's kind of a fellowship supper the first night of first Wednesday of the month, but it's kind of a decentralized thing.
How would you summarize your theological views for the listening audience?
Now you'll laugh at this because people would disagree with this. Well, let me tell you what I try to be. I try to be winsomely reformed. Mm-hmm. I am mainstream. There's nothing in the Westminster Confession of Faith I disagree with. In fact, that everything in it I love. I'm very committed to our Confession of
Faith. The Westminster Confession of Faith, for some of you who may not know, has been the doctrinal standard for Presbyterian churches, not only in America, but in Britain, in England, Scotland, Ireland. It's been their doctrinal standards for 350 years.
So I'm Reformed, and but I'm also an evangelical. I don't want to get to the point where I'm one of those Calvinists that believes we don't have to go out and reach the world because people will be saved anyway. I try to stay away, as you know, from extreme things, extreme views of the law or of grace. It's hard to keep a balance. But I would say that I would be mainstream Reformed.
What do you want to be the distinguishing characteristics of your congregation when people know you well, Christians and non-Christians in this community? What is it that you'd aspire them to see in your congregation?
Four things. I would summarize it in four things because these are the four sides of the ministry. I try to follow what Packer calls the Puritan quadrilateral that one of my other heroes, Bishop John Charles Ryle, used. The evangelization of your people, the holiness of your congregation, the reformation of the church, and the unity of Christians. And so I want our people to have a heart for the lost, to be gracious and compassionate people. We were all lost at one time, and I want us to be evangelistic and missions-oriented. I want us to be reformed. We need to be concerned about the purity of our doctrine and our worship. And that's an ongoing thing. You know, you're always trying to, there's always nuances that want to come into the church and want to prove God's methods. And so I want us to be historic and reformed and biblical in the things we do. I want us to be holy, and that's increasingly difficult in a postmodern society. But I also want us to, I want unity. I don't like, when I was a younger man, I think I would criticize other denominations too much from the pulpit. I don't do that anymore. I want our people to to realize that in this postmodern culture, if a person who's maybe a Methodist or a Baptist or even a Lutheran or somebody who's with us on the basics about the gospel, then they're with us. They're not the competitor. They're our friends. We have many more enemies than that. You know. So I would say those four things, genuine and a genuine community of love and faith and truth.
As you look at your congregation, what would you say are some of the strengths and weaknesses that you see?
Some of those things are obviously there. They are missions-minded people.
Yeah.
I would like to see them a little bit more aggressive in reaching out to their neighbors. I think our people lead serious attempts at a holy life. We do not have the discipline problems we used to have. Our people have good, stable family lives. They are gracious towards other Christians. We're not prone to controversy there. And I never have them complain about doing it the Reformed and biblical way. Now, where they would be weaker, because I know that's coming next, is I think sometimes they are captivated by what I call the Northeast Jackson busyness. They're just busy with soccer clubs and ballet and this and that. They're very generous with their money, maybe not as generous with their time. I noticed the younger generation, they are struggling with how to discipline children. They're struggling how to be a parent. You know, they come and ask me things, and, you know, can I spank my child and things like that, because they've been taught some different things. And I think that a congregation takes on a pastor's personality, and as you know, I can be a pretty non-excitable, almost melancholy person at times, and sometimes I wish there was more joy in our worship and enthusiasm. God's doing good things in our church, and I know when I come here at First Pres, the people always seem to be so excited about what's going on. And I'd like to see a little bit more of that.
I feel the same way sometimes. I don't know what that is. Maybe sometimes in our own settings we can't sense some of the joy that is there because we're not actually out there among them since we're up front. But I think that probably when we get together with some of our fellow ministers, we would say similar types of things and wonder how we could. We know ultimately the Holy Spirit has to promote that, but we ourselves want to make sure that things are in place where we're not impeding that and that we are in an appropriate way fostering that. Right. Well, let me follow up on that and ask, what you talk about the sort of the Northeast Jackson treadmill of just gobs of stuff going on. What are some of the cultural challenges that you and your congregation face and trying to achieve this sort of a vision for life and ministry together?
Well, I think, as you know, I'm a fan of David Wells, and I'm, in fact, this morning I just began the fourth of those books he's
Above
written.
All Earthly Powers.
I don't know of anybody who's engaged the postmodern mind and thinking with the Bible as well as Dr. Wells, and you know him, you and Ann know him personally. But I think we face all the challenge of postmodernity. Now, I would say that my people don't struggle with moral absolutes, but sometimes I think they struggle with saying something absolute to someone else. They're not as bold in their witness. It is offensive, but sometimes you just have to look people in the face and say, I'm sorry, you're wrong. Jesus is the only way, and this is false. We live on the treadmill of, I think we feel that if we're not involved in everything everybody else is, two things are going to happen to us. We won't be in the group, and we won't feel affirmation. And we'll be missing something, and we're not happy, but if we don't have it, we might be less happy. And I think the biggest challenge is to convince people that Christ is sufficient to make us happy and complete. And it probably would be good not to do some things, to be the odd man out occasionally, to build the character, to take a stand. I fear, and we've had lunches over this, Ligon, that someday, if real persecution ever arose in America, I just don't know how many of our people would be able to withstand the pressure and be the person who stands against the tide. How you produce that, I just think the Holy Spirit has to. We can preach hard. I would like to see a little bit more prophetic edge to our whole evangelical Christianity. I read this morning Wells made an insightful comment. He said that secular therapy that is spiritually oriented today sounds awful much like evangelical piety that is
therapeutically oriented.
And he's right.
Yeah, it's so true.
You know, it's not all about me. There is something, as our motto at the church, there is something larger than life and greater than self and lasting forever that if you and I get lost in, we are happy in this life and glorious in the next. And, of course, that's Christ and his kingdom.
Mike, what are you preaching on right now?
I am in, I'm right behind you guys here. I'm finishing the pastoral epistles. I'm in the end of chapter 1 of 2 Timothy.
And on Sunday mornings?
Sunday mornings.
Okay.
I usually do, if I'm in the New Testament in the morning, I'm usually in an Old Testament in the evening and vice versa. And I am doing something different on Sunday night. I'm in the first 11 chapters of Deuteronomy, and I'm taking them, as you know, Moses and laying out principles for the people of God there. And I've entitled the series The Shining City on a Hill. It's how Deuteronomy and Moses teaches us to engage in the cultural mandate to take every thought captive and someday every institution captive to the obedience of Christ.
And now you've got some books at the publisher now, or at least a book at
the publisher. There's a book on preaching for revitalization that comes out, I think, in February.
Now, with which publisher?
Christian Focus, out of Scotland.
Okay.
And then they also have just
Us about that book again. The title is something like
Preaching for Revitalization.
Okay. And so a minister who's driving out to you know, Chula or down to Mendenhall or up to Yazoo City this morning, and they're wanting to know what the contents of that book might be about. Tell us what you were trying to do in that
book. It's basically, because it was my doctoral dissertation, of which you were the faculty supervisor. As you remember, it's an examination, it's a survey of the characteristics, themes, and ethos of Puritan preaching and how that does address the needs of our modern culture.
Right. Now, if there's someone in the listening audience today who says, well, you know, I'd like to visit Trinity Presbyterian Church and I'd like to go to a service, what time are your services on Sunday?
Sunday school's at 9. In Jackson time, that means we start at 9:15.
don't say that to Joseph Hoyt.
Oh, it drives me nuts. Church is at 10:30, and we start at 10:30, and we go to 11:45.
Okay.
And then Sunday evening is at 6 o'clock.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So 9 o'clock Sunday school,
10:30
worship service,
6 p.m.
6 o'clock Sunday evening, and that's a distinct worship service. I know a lot of you are used to churches out there that sort of do, you know, they'll do a Saturday service and a Sunday service and a Sunday night service, and they're all the same service. This is the way they used to do it everywhere, where you have a Sunday morning service and then a separate Sunday evening service, and the people come back for it, so I'd encourage you to do that. So now, let's say they want to come to an inquirer's class and find more out about the church. How often do those classes
run? Every 8 weeks, and one starts this Sunday.
Okay, so you've got an inquirer's class starting this Sunday. At 9 o'clock. And you can call Trinity Presbyterian Church at
601-977-0774.
Say it one more time. 601-977-0774. And the website is trinitychurchpca.com. We've been talking with Mike Ross, a dear friend and colleague today. Mike, thanks so much
for being with us
on First Things. And I trust the Lord will bless you in your ministry at this new location.
Thank you.
Folks, thanks for listening. Have a good Lord's Day.